So we started this series called Real Issues, Real Voices a few weeks ago, and it's different than anything we've ever done. We're tackling some interesting, sometimes even controversial topics, and so today we're going to talk about marijuana. And I thought about asking the band to play a little John Denver during the offering there, a little Rocky Mountain High, but that felt sacrilegious coming out of communion. I don't know why, but it did. So, but we're going to talk about this issue, and before we even jump into it, let me give you some history, because I think there's an interesting history behind this. In 1917, the state of Colorado outlawed the use of marijuana. It was one of several states at that time that recognized that this was a drug that had detrimental effects, and so they outlawed the use of it. And then a number of years later, in 1937, the federal government outlawed it, considered it a drug, made it illegal in our entire nation. So that was right before World War II. And then a number of years went by, and it didn't seem to be an issue that people cared too much about until the 60s. Right? And the counterculture hit, and a lot of people began using marijuana quite frequently, and it became more of an issue in our nation and our culture. And a number of people in the 60s and in the 70s began pushing for or endorsing the use of marijuana, both medically and recreationally, and trying to overturn the laws of the nation and of different states. And in fact, in 1979, I don't know if you knew this, the state of Colorado passed legislation legalizing marijuana to be used medically for cancer and glaucoma patients. And yet, the act that they passed in 1979 required federal approval. And federal approval never came because the federal government still saw that it was an illegal substance and saw it that way. So nothing really changed. But in the 80s and 90s, there were more movements to potentially legalize it. And then in the year 2000, the state of Colorado was the first state to actually pass an amendment to its state constitution legalizing the use of marijuana in medical situations, certain medical situations. Other states like California had passed some provisions, but Colorado was the first state to actually pass an amendment to its state constitution. And now in the early 2000s, there were still questions about how it should get used in a medical sense, especially since the federal government still saw it as an illegal substance. And so if the federal government sees it that way, how does it work if a state is saying that it's okay to be used medically? And so it was used in limited ways until 2009. And in 2009, the federal government basically came back and said, you know what, we haven't changed our actual stance. We still see it as an illegal substance, but we're not going to use our resources to prosecute people in a state like Colorado that are using it in terms with their own laws in medical form or fashion. Basically, they said it's not worth our time or energy to prosecute people who are using it in that way. And that's really when the medical marijuana industry took off here in Denver and in Colorado in 2009. And then in 2012, in November of 2012 at the election, 55% of Coloradans voted for an amendment to make recreational marijuana legal here in the state, and things changed somewhat substantially at that point. Now, I give you all that history because you might be sitting here today going, like, what does that have to do with faith or our religion or what we believe about Jesus and all those kind of things? And I actually think it has a lot to do with it for several reasons. A lot of people have actually come to me and said, what do we think about this? Like, how should we process this? Because it has become such a big issue in our culture, especially in Colorado. I mean, this is like a bellwether state. We're one of the states that's kind of, you know, experimenting with this and trying to figure out what it looks like. And a lot of other states are looking to Colorado. It's become part of our identity now, whether we like it or not. I don't know. Have you seen the new radio station here in Denver? Smoking 94.1, K-Bud, 420 News and Big Hits. There's like billboards all over. And it's actually a decent station if you like Bob Marley and classic rock. But it's fascinating. I mean, people are traveling to Colorado now, and even, you know, sort of especially the recreational side of things. We're not going to talk so much about medical marijuana today because that's a different issue. But at least from a recreational standpoint, it's become part of Colorado's identity. And so people are asking, how do I perceive this? Especially as Christians, because there's some people as Christians who feel like it's very immoral. Like it's just wrong. They still see it as sort of a drug and that, using it makes you a criminal, and so they have very strong opinions. And there's other people that feel like, well, no, it actually has benefits. It can enhance your life. And so how do we as Christians think about that and process that? And of course, a lot of parents have asked me, and people have asked me, like, how do I think about this in terms of my kids? Like, how do I even talk to them about it? And so we feel like it's one of those issues we do need to discuss as Christians. What does our faith have to say about it, especially if we think everything really is spiritual? Everything we consume, everything we put in our bodies, how we live, what kind of lifestyles and habits we have, if those are very spiritual issues that we feel like God actually cares about, and we're integrated and whole human beings, then this is something that we should talk about as a community of faith. And so we're going to do that today. I'm sure there's going to be some folks in here who have strong opinions. I know some of you do. I know some of you have very sort of anti-marijuana feelings because you have a certain understanding of it. And there's others. I mean, I've talked to folks in our congregation who have used marijuana for medical reasons, and it's actually enhanced sort of their condition. They've been going through they've had difficult medical problems. There's actually somebody that comes to our church that owns and manages a marijuana dispensary here in town. And so there's sort of people on both sides of the issue. So we feel like this is a place where we can have a helpful and fruitful and thoughtful conversation. And maybe even today, kind of hit pause on whatever strong emotions we already have and step back for a second and just process things from a big picture standpoint. And just begin to ask some questions about this issue. Now, I don't know how to talk about this issue because there are a lot of questions about the health benefits and the science and studies. And is this a danger to our society? And what do the sort of early studies say about how we understand this? I don't know how to do that very well myself. So we feel like we probably need to talk to someone who's an expert in this. So we've done that. And so I want to invite up Chris Thurston. Dr. Chris Thurston is going to come up. Let's give Chris a hand. Let me tell you a little bit about Chris real quickly as he sits down, and I'm going to ask him some questions, and he's going to help us think about this today. But Chris is one of fewer than 36 physicians in the United States who's board certified in general child and adolescent and addictions psychiatry. So that's a pretty major thing. He's medical director of a youth substance abuse treatment clinic and associate professor of psychiatry at UC Denver. He also serves as director of medical training for the university's Addiction Medicine Fellowship Program. He's a major in the U.S. Army, and he treats American service members who need mental health care. He speaks fluent Spanish. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And he's ranked in the top 15 tennis players in the nation in his USTA division. Mm-hmm. He's got a wicked forehand. But more importantly than all of that, I've known Chris for more than 20 years, and he's a really good guy. So that's like the most important thing you need to know about Chris. So, Chris, let's do this. Tell us a little bit more. So you're basically a child psychiatrist. That's your focus. But tell us a little bit more maybe about your engagement with the issue of marijuana or your background or experience.
Right. So, like you said, I'm a child psychiatrist, I'm an addiction psychiatrist, and I run an adolescent substance treatment program here in Denver at Denver Health. And really, I just like to see patients, do my research, and I'd be happy to live out my research career in a basement somewhere and just not be involved in the public sector with this. And you know, before 2009, I thought marijuana, what's the big deal, right? I didn't even think about it, really. And then in 2009, I started having my patients who were in treatment with me. These are adolescents, mostly, some young adults, who were in treatment for marijuana addiction, but then they had their medical marijuana card, or they were getting medical marijuana from somebody they knew, or they were telling me, Doc, why would I stop using this? This is my medicine for my anger, my ADHD, my PTSD, whatever it is. And so I just very innocently wrote a piece for the Denver Post saying, basically, something ain't right here. you know, we're giving kids marijuana. We're giving people with addiction marijuana. We're calling it medicine. Kids are having easy access to this. It's not good for them. And to me, it was such a no-brainer at the time. But then just writing a little perspectives piece for the Denver Post, it got picked up like around the world, basically. And all of a sudden, I was like thrown into the spotlight as like the poster child, the spokesman for marijuana issues. And at that time, no physicians were speaking up about this. So I was like, okay, God, I guess I'll do this. And there were very few Christians who were involved in this conversation as well, too. So kind of by default, I got involved in this whole topic.
So tell us who is using marijuana? Because there is this medical and sort of recreational piece,
right.
And we would probably want to focus more on the recreational piece today, but
right.
There's legitimate questions and about people using it for medical reasons. So how do as a doctor and someone seeing sort of the spectrum of people, how do you assess what kind of people are using it and for valid reasons or invalid reasons, those kind of things?
Right. So I think there's very little debate that there's a subpopulation of people, like the extreme case, end-stage pancreatic cancer, you have just a few months to live or something. And if whatever gives them comfort, of course you want to do that, right? And so the Institute of Medicine published their report in 1999 saying that that's an appropriate use of this, compassionate use. And then I think there's no debate either that there's a significant population that's using this not appropriately. It would be against medical advice, really. And the problem with that is that we know that, I mean, the politically correct language is that we're supposed to say adult use marijuana, not recreational. So is what they want us to say. But the problem is that's really an oxymoron. So there are 2.4 million new users of marijuana every year in the United States. And we know that 58% of them, so almost 60%, are under the age of 18. And we know that the peak prevalence age for marijuana use is age 20, followed by age 19, followed by age 18. So marijuana really is disproportionately used by young people. And that's a big problem, I think, as we're going to get into, because we used to think the brain was done developing at age 6, and boom, you're done. And now we know the brain's developing into the mid-20s or so, and that marijuana can have a very significant impact on this.
So if we set aside for a moment those adults
right.
who are using it for this
right.
subset of population you said
right.
who could use it for very valid medical reasons,
right.
we set
right.
that aside for a second and we focus on those who you say it's a pretty high population of young people
right.
beginning to use. What are the health sort of either benefits, because I think some people would say there are benefits, or the health risks or dangers you see from marijuana use, either in adults or in a younger population, as you
right.
mentioned.
So, right, just marching through development here, we know that, well, actually, we're part of a grant that did some qualitative research of adults who were using marijuana and found that there's a big drop in the perceived harmfulness of marijuana during pregnancy. So, more and more pregnant women using it, possibly to treat nausea first trimester. And we have some nice data now, longitudinal studies, kids grown up to age 14 now, showing that prenatal exposure is associated with significant problems. Drop in IQ of about 6 points by age 5. Behavior problems and emotional problems, increased rates of depression at age 10. And then decreased school achievement, and then also higher risk for using marijuana themselves at age 14. So I think hopefully we can reach some consensus not for pregnant women. And then hopefully we can reach some consensus around not for young children. So Children's Hospital Colorado reporting significant increases in the toxic exposures of young children eating these edibles, brownies, candies, things like that. And that's a medical emergency, right? We're going to talk about that in a second. But if a child gets a hold of it, that's a medical emergency. They can, of the 14 kids in a case series that Children's Hospital Colorado published in the last 2 years, 8 of them had to be admitted to the hospital because of the severity of the medical complications, and some of them to the intensive care unit. So that's a medical emergency. And then teenagers, developing brain. It's unfortunate that the very receptor in the brain that marijuana binds to is the receptor that helps control brain development. So that's a big deal. The brain's undergoing major development in adolescence. The very receptor that's helping to control that, marijuana, is messing with. And so we know that adolescent exposure to marijuana confers a 2 to 4-fold increased risk in the rates of schizophrenia in adulthood. Heavy marijuana use in adolescence, beginning in adolescence, associated with up to an 8-point drop in IQ, which, by the way, I have a slide on this too, is equivalent to the drop in IQ related to lead exposure. So with lead exposure, So on the left you have the amount of drop in IQ, okay, and then on the top there you have lead and marijuana. So if a child has a lead level of about 1 to 10 micrograms per deciliter, so that's how it's measured, then their drop in IQ is about 7 points. If they go 10 to 30 units there, they lose an additional 2.5 points of IQ on average. So, by the way, Norton, when we were growing up, that would be an average lead level. So most of us had a lead level, if you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s or so, of about 10 micrograms per deciliter when we were growing up. But then we figured this out, and we got lead out of our paint, out of our gasoline, out of everything, and out of our pencils, I suppose. And so the average lead levels dropped. That's a major public health victory right there. So with marijuana on the right there, THC, main active ingredient in marijuana, drop in IQ with in utero exposure is about 5 points. And then drop in IQ with heavy marijuana exposure beginning in adolescence is about 8 points. And so you see it's on par there with the drop in IQ with lead. And so we took this very seriously with this lead issue, right? And so what's going to be our response to this neurotoxin that our kids are being increasingly exposed to now? I think, and that's why I so appreciate being here right now. We're marching through development. Marijuana's not great for adults either in general.
Yeah, so, that would probably be a big question. I think everyone would probably say, obviously pregnant women shouldn't use it. Kids shouldn't use it. But shouldn't consenting adults be able to use it? Or maybe not even shouldn't they use it, but are there health risks to them using it?
Right.
Can't they just enjoy?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, marijuana's not great for adults either, right? So we know that heavy marijuana use confers greater risk of bronchitis, so that's inflammation of different parts of the lungs, and phlegm production, increased risk of heart attack with marijuana exposure, because marijuana, if you think about it, puts a fair amount of stress on the heart. It increases your heart rate, you're ingesting carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, different things that just make the heart work harder. And also the heart has these marijuana receptors as well, so there may be a direct effect on the heart. We also know that there are a lot of carcinogens in marijuana smoke, so if you put marijuana smoke together with tobacco smoke on a graph, there's lots of overlap in terms of the chemicals that they have and the carcinogens that they have. So it's not a great thing for adults to use either, but I think a main thing with adults is that what do kids do? Kids do what adults do, right? Kids want to grow up to be adults. And so we're, like it or not, we're really role models for the next generation. And so if they see adults, we as adults using marijuana, then we're setting a big example. And that's fleshed out by the science too. So parents who use marijuana, their kids have a 2-fold increased risk of going on to use marijuana themselves. So, I mean, it makes sense. So anyway, that would be, yeah.
Yeah, now you've told me in the past, in light of all the public health issues that are associated with it, you feel like there's a problem of deception as terms of the way it's being presented to people. Is that based on you think the public health thing is being deceiving? Or how do you see deception playing a role?
Right. So can we have the slide, please, on the gummy bears? Right, since they look so delicious. So we know, I think it's basic business. We know that 80% of tobacco alcohol company profits come from heavy adult users. So they don't make, the tobacco alcohol companies don't make their money from somebody who has a glass of wine once a week, once a month, whatever. They make their money from people who use daily. And so how do you become a daily user of tobacco, alcohol, marijuana, whatever other substance it is? Do you wake up in your 40s and 50s and say, okay, I think I'm going to become a daily heavy user of whatever substance, right? It just doesn't work that way. It's a process that starts in adolescence and then progresses on from there. It's just basic business. So that's why the tobacco alcohol companies have been busted so many times advertising to young people. That's why when we were growing up, we had the candy-flavored cigarettes.
Yeah.
That's why we had Joe Camel cartoon character. In the mid-90s, 60% of six-year-olds could draw a line from Joe Camel cartoon to a carton, a package of cigarettes. So that advertising was very effective in penetrating the youth market like that. And so so we have it now to where we have products that are extraordinarily appealing to young people. We have these gummy bears, we have the candy bars, you see bright colors, you see cartoon characters. You can't have cartoon characters advertising tobacco anymore because we know it's so effective in appealing to kids. We can't have mint-flavored tobacco cigarettes anymore. The FDA doesn't allow that because we know it's so extraordinarily appealing to young people. And so, but here we are with these products that appeal to young people, that grab them, hook them in, develop the heavy users. So I think that's really the biggest deception there is. But I think there are other deceptions as well going on. When you have a big, so marijuana now is a conservatively a $1 billion industry in Colorado and probably a $3 billion industry. And so with that comes heavy marketing, PR, lobbying, things like that. And so kids tell me all the time, and this is borne out by the data, the perceived harmfulness of marijuana is really going down. Doc, don't you know there's nothing wrong with it? It's a safe alternative to alcohol. It's a good thing kids are using more marijuana because then they'll be using less alcohol, right? So a lot of things, I think, deception like that. We know that it's very common to drive under the influence of marijuana now. We know 25% of high schoolers in Denver got into a car driven by someone who had just used marijuana in the last month. So we need to get that out there. It's not okay to drive. It's not okay for pregnant women. It's not okay for kids. It really is addictive. There's no scientific debate that it's not just psychologically addictive, but also physically addictive. Yes, there's a physical dependence that people can develop on marijuana. So I think those are some of the myths that we need to dispel out there.
Now, you've mentioned tobacco and alcohol
right.
a couple of times, which
right.
is interesting because I think a lot of people who would push back against
right.
some of your data would say, well, but we let adults smoke cigarettes.
Right.
We let them drink alcohol. And we know that there's dangers behind that as well. Is this really any different? Why can't we just let adults or, you know, if we can make sure kids aren't doing it, why can't we just let adults do the same thing with marijuana that they would do with cigarettes or alcohol?
I mean, I think it's a great point. And so when I'm speaking up about this issue, I'm really not talking about the adult who's using in the privacy of their own home and not driving and not using around children and not giving it to children, right? Those are some of my good friends, and those are my patients whom I feel like I'm advocating for when I'm speaking up about this issue. So, and I really don't judge them around that. I think so. What is the big deal about it is that we know that, for example, tobacco is the leading cause of death in the United States, and it has been for decades. The third leading cause of death is alcohol. And so hopefully I would like for us to learn a lesson about those two substances and perhaps have that inform marijuana policy now. So we don't just repeat the same mistake, not once, but twice now, with a third substance. And so I think the big deal around this is to avoid the commercialization of it. So maybe if you can go to I think it's my last slide with the nest, right? We've really, I've become part of this group, Smart Approaches to Marijuana, that's really, we're rejecting that false dichotomy. On the bottom left is incarceration. I don't think anybody wants to incarcerate people for simple possession of marijuana, right? And that wasn't happening before we legalized marijuana in Colorado anyway. So
the answer is not just to criminalize a behavior and focus on it as a criminal behavior.
Right, exactly. So that's, and then on the opposite side is to like fully legalize, which was what we've done, and to have almost a marijuana store on every corner now, right? I think those are two extreme positions, basically. And if those are my two options, well, actually, I would vote for legalization, right? But if I had a third way, ideally, I would vote for some kind of third way. And so we were trying to create the space where it's safe, like right now, where people of faith can be involved, teachers, doctors, scientists don't like speaking up about this stuff. You just get ripped to shreds. And
because it becomes politicized, or why?
I think because it becomes politicized, but also this is big money now. So I've had a death threat. I've been called extremist, racist, all sorts of things for basically saying what I'm saying now. And so scientists, that's not our idea of fun, right? That's not any that probably, I mean, probably some people think that's fun, but it's not our idea of fun in general for a scientist. You just want to do your research and get, but we're trying to create a space here, a nice nest where people can get involved in this issue and topic and have a constructive conversation around it. And so that's why I think I'm so thrilled and so privileged to be here today to really engage people of faith, which is a voice that's really been lacking. The spiritual dimension of it has really not been present, has been very absent in this conversation as a whole as I've traveled around. And so we're really trying to develop a third way where we're promoting research into new medicines that are based on marijuana components. We're trying to promote compassionate access to marijuana-based medicines. We're trying to avoid another big tobacco experience. We're trying to reform laws so that we're not incarcerating people mindlessly. So that's really a third way we're trying to develop here.
And what do you see as the barriers to that?
Right. Why is this not happening? I think it's a great question because, again, it's back to money. There are some people, a few people, who are really making a lot of money now. And that controls a lot of the PR, marketing, lobbying around that. And so it's the same thing with tobacco. If you look back, we knew that tobacco caused cancer in the 1930s. We had a pretty good idea around that. And the tobacco companies had their own pseudoscience that they put out there to make us confused for so long, telling us that it doesn't really cause cancer all the way up into the 90s, telling us that secondhand smoke really wasn't all that bad for you up until the 2000s, right? And now big tobacco is trying to tell us that these vaporized products are harmless as well. So that's a topic for a different day. But I think that's the big obstacle, is that there's just, and it's really just business, right? You're just trying to look out for the bottom line, and I think it's easy to confuse people, create a lot of chaos and noise around this.
Okay, so this is there's a lot of science and sort of public policy and those kind of things. Maybe one more question. What motivates you from a faith perspective? And as you think about this idea or this issue, what motivates you from a faith standpoint?
Right. So, we didn't even talk about that, but I've been a Christian now for, I don't know, 20-some years. You probably saw me get baptized.
Yeah.
Did you really?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
At First Baptist Church Durham and a long time ago. and I'd like to hear more from you because I feel this is a very spiritual issue. Standing up for youth seems very spiritual to me. Standing up for truth and trying to get accurate science out there, right? Legalize it if you want, use it if you want, but please don't tell me it's not addictive, that it's safe, safe for young people. Please don't tell me it's okay to drive under the influence, that it's okay for pregnant women.
What about, you talked about vulnerable populations right. as well. That's an issue I know that you've mentioned to me as something that's on your heart.
Right. So exactly. I think also we have, there's a responsibility to protect vulnerable populations. So we know that adult use marijuana really is an oxymoron, that it's disproportionately used by young people and disproportionately, they have a disproportionate burden, health burden, because of their youth, because of their developing bodies. And so I believe there's a responsibility to protect young people and vulnerable populations as well. If you look at it too, the people who are the people who own most of the stores and commercialization of it, who are the people who are benefiting mostly, are people 40s, 50s, look like me probably, right? Who are the people disproportionately using it? Young people, as I mentioned. Also, Journal of the American Medical Association published a nice paper recently showing that the populations in which we're seeing the biggest growth in marijuana addiction are young Hispanic Latino males, young Hispanic or young African American males. So I think there's just an injustice happening there. And so, you know, I'm motivated by the concept of Jesus inviting the children to come to him. I'm very motivated by the idea that Jesus was so kind and compassionate and non-judgmental in many ways. The woman at the well and the woman caught in adultery. And at the same time, he was tough as nails to the Pharisees and getting rid of the money changers in the temple. And he created a whip and whipped them out. I mean, it's amazing. And so I'm learning to see how being kind and being strong are not opposites, but really two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's something I'm learning a lot about as well.
And how do we do that? I mean, maybe you would push us to say, if you want to take these seriously, try to find this third way approach and try to be kind and compassionate where that's due and tough at times where that's due. How do we figure out how to do that?
Right.
Any thoughts?
I think it's, looking at Jesus' example, I would beg people to get involved in SAM, Smart Approaches to Marijuana, which I think is amazing. We have Patrick Kennedy on the left, and we have David Frum on the right, so it's not a liberal, conservative, Democrat, Republican issue. We have scientists involved, we have all sorts of people involved, and we need more faith voice involved in this as well. So I beg people to check it out online, learn about sam.org. I have a website. If you Google Dr. Thurstone, you'll find all sorts of hate stuff, but but the first link will also be my website, and I would love to engage people in this conversation and hear more about it.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. We're almost out of time, so let me just say a couple things. First, let's give Chris a hand. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
And as we've said all along during this series, we want to listen to voices from the outside and really from people who are wrapped up in these issues and for whom these kinds of things are personal and who experience them every day. And that's Chris. I mean, you have patients and people you're trying to help every day who are sort of wrapped up in all of this. And so if you're here today, I hope we can take his thoughts and his data and all the science and all of those kind of things and really consider them. You might be here and you might be very persuaded by what he shared. You might be here and you might have all kinds of other questions like, well, what about this and what about that? And I don't, and that's okay as well. This is really starting a conversation. And yet, I hope we can really strongly consider what he shared. You might have the question like, what do I do next? And so I think what you said, maybe go to these websites or you can talk to Chris afterwards. I mean, we're not going to tell you what to do next. Right. That's really up for you to figure out. But I would say get involved in the issue and start thoughtfully thinking about it more. Because if we don't have a voice as Christians in issues like this, then truthfully, money and there will be other voices that will take precedence. And so I think we have a burden and a responsibility to enter these kind of conversations in the public sphere. In terms of our church, you might be saying, like, well, do we have a position? Like, what's the New Denver church position? And we don't. We don't take, I mean, we've said this over and over about lots of other sort of secondary issues. We don't take sort of public official positions on these kind of issues because we wanted to respect the diversity in our church. Like, we don't want to speak for everyone on secondary issues. We don't think it's our role or our call to do that. Personally, I will say for me, and I think I can speak for Stephen and Dan as well, because we've talked about this before, but personally, I do think we're compelled by a lot of the research and a lot of the thoughts that Chris has shared, and feel like this is an important issue, and there are a lot of dangers out there that we really do need to be aware of, and that we need to think about, especially as we think about kids and the next generation, and how we're going to engage this issue. And so I do think that's important for us to consider, and I hope we can continue to consider those kind of things as a church and talk about them. But at the end of the day, wherever you land on this, I would just say be fully convinced in your own mind where God is leading you as you think about this. Paul said that. Remember in Romans 14, when there was this issue that cropped up in the early church about meat being sacrificed to idols, and some people weren't sure if that's a bad thing, and some people aren't sure about that's a good thing. Basically, Paul said, at the end of the day, search your heart and you know, search what God's perspective is on this, and be fully convinced in your own mind what is right, and then pursue that with all the conviction you can pursue. And so on these sort of issues, that's really what we would say. Because what pulls us together are the central issues and the foundational issues and what we believe as Christians about God and about Jesus and what we celebrated before. And so we've actually ended each time in this series by just saying the Apostles' Creed together. And so we're going to do that again today. So if you'll stand, we're going to sing one closing song. But before we do that, let's all just say the Apostles' Creed together.